Well, you can call it a scam. I will call it instead. Hold on, my staff. What should I call it? What? No, I need a word to call call it Seattle Spirit. But we've got the best weed. No, we do.
What we want is our first graders to have a Glock on their hip.
They put that debt on my grandchildren.
The most transparent administration in our state's history.
Based on ideology rather than the facts.
Well, I'm a doodler.
All right, this requires just a little bit of context for everybody because we get new listeners all the time, and that's quite a blessing. When I tell you that Sound Transit is a criminal conspiracy, I'm not being hyperbolic. I am not exaggerating. I am making a statement of fact. Okay? Now, if they didn't believe that, they know for sure I don't ask permission for any of the bosses for what I say here. They know, because I've said on the air, that my arrangement with the radio station is I'm basically a vendor, right? I have a mixed contract here, and I'm treated very well. So they know that my words are my words. So if they disagree with me when I say that they're a criminal conspiracy, they could come at me. But when I say that, you got to understand, I'm not speaking from a form of entertainment. This is a criminal conspiracy. Okay, the crimes are many and various. The easiest ones to us first to remember are the undisputed crimes of giving Orca Card data. That's the so-called customers of Sound Transit. You're not a customer. You are a product. Okay, but they call you customers. They gave your data to two companies, and they're not lobbying. They're not nonprofits. They're not even registered properly. They are lobbying groups, and basically they're companies. Mass Transit Now and Transportation Choices Coalition. So they get this data, and that's just the beginning. That's an illegal gift of government data to these illegal lobbying groups. And when I say illegal lobbying groups, I mean they're supposed to be registered as lobbyists because they lobby. And I'm not the one who pointed that out. The Tacoma News Tribune did a brilliant, brilliant piece on who makes transportation policy decisions in the state. Those groups are also funded by big developers who launder that money. They're really donating to Sound Transit, but it's laundered through those groups, which is, as last time I checked, money laundering is also illegal. Also, Sound Transit pays so-called membership fees to those organizations. They're not allowed to do that. That, as I understand it, is also illegal. It's blatantly illegal to give them Orca Card data. Okay, so when I say criminal conspiracy, I mean that, and that's just the smallest. That's the stuff we can prove. The stuff that we can't prove is that developers are calling where the train stations go because they want them here or they want them there. They're saying, we want a train station on Capitol Hill because for 12 years we can call it affordable housing. After 12 years, we can make them into luxury condos. So the developers are calling these shots. Those monies go, again, through Mass Transit Now, Transportation Choices Coalition, back to Sound Transit, who pays their employees two times what the average state worker earns. Got it? That's the tip of the iceberg, because we don't have a lot of time. So Sound Transit, who is charging you an illegal car tab tax, how can I say it's illegal? Because the state's legislature has denied this, has canceled this method of valuing cars. They're not allowed to do that anymore. Sound Transit didn't care. They did it anyway. They hid the formula. They made it impossible to find within the bill, which is unconstitutional, a higher form of illegality. So Joel Ard, we broke this story, by the way. Joel Ard is an attorney who is sued Sound Transit for the illegal car tab fees, and Joel has offered them a settlement. Okay, he says, look, give some money back to people, figure that out, or give them a credit on their next car tabs, and I'll make this suit go away. Jeff Patrick, the spokesperson for the criminal conspiracy known as Sound Transit, Jeff Patrick says they're concerned that paying the settlement would be illegal. Concerned that they might break the law by creating a settlement in a lawsuit. I mean, Jeff Patrick, gosh, love you. It is not illegal to pay a settlement in a lawsuit. Everything else I just described is illegal. You don't care about the law. You work at Sound Transit. And you're higher up at Sound Transit. Isn't that entertaining? Aren't you just laughing and giggling at that? Downtown today, Michael Crow from King 5 showed up, did his duty, took a picture of Iwana, now known as the Bhagwan Shrill Sawant.
And they are protesting this separation of migrant families on today, the deadline, the court-ordered deadline for the Trump administration to reunite those families. So they're out here chanting right now. They've also got these strollers here to represent those children that are currently being detained.
Yeah, they built a wall around the ICE building, by the way. So the Bhagwan Shrill Sawant and how she works her scam is so, it's so similar to Sound Transit. So she has her 15 Now organization and then the Socialist Workers Alternative Organizations. Those organizations are also illegal. They're not companies. They're not nonprofits. They're just things that people give money to. And the Bhagwan Shrill Sawant and her husband use that money to travel around the country and the world, in fact, as I understand it, to have their brand built or have the Bhagwan Shrill Sawant's brand built. She, in turn, works with groups like Wheel and Share, which are poverty pimps. And the people who stay in those low barrier shelters, meaning they're government funded heroin dens, but just right now, not officially that, but that's what they are. They stay in those dens. And part of the reason, or one of the ways they can earn points with these groups, as has been explained by Safe Seattle and Facebook, is to go agitate for the Bhagwan Shrill Sawant. It's the same thing as the Bhagwan Shri Rajneesh, which is why we call her the Bhagwan Shrill Sawant. It's perfect because a lot of these people down there today are probably the same protesters, right? From, you know, paid through points, through share, etc. Now, there are real problems in our city. There's real problems in our county. And it's not about bike lanes and it's not about colored intersections. It's not about any of that. Do you remember when Joel McDermott, who's on the King County Council, he's the one who wants to force you to not be able to use your gun at home? Yeah, he wants you to lock up your gun so that if, God forbid, someone breaks into your house, you can't use it or render it inoperable. So they're pretending to be considering this at the King County Council. They also want the health board to monitor this. They want to make, quote, gun violence a health issue. Why? Because then in King County, because of an activist judge named Veronica Alicia Galvan, then we can no longer vote on gun issues. So Joel McDermott spoke with Dave Ross in Seattle's Morning News.
I'll also be rolling out legislation requiring safe storage of firearms throughout unincorporated King County. And I'm asking for a report working with youth who live daily with the threat and concern of gun violence.
Okay, so he wants to force you to lock up your gun so you can't use it. He wants to talk to youth who live daily with the fear of gun violence. But you know what's not mentioned in any of this? Gang violence, right? That's left to the actual cops who have to go face this stuff. And guess what? Safes are not going to stop it. Trigger locks aren't going to stop it. What would stop it would actually be admitting there's a problem. Q13's Brandy Cruz spoke with Special Agent Derek Pleasance and Seattle PD Assistant Chief Mark Garth Green.
If you're using a firearm in a crime and we recover that evidence, we're able to pursue you. We're able to link you to other crimes.
Okay, so they're talking about gangs, right? That they want to go out and have a coordinated effort against gangs.
And eventually, we're going to apprehend you and bring you to justice.
It reflects a shift in the way Seattle and surrounding cities investigate gang shootings, a high-tech tool for high-tech times.
If I have shell casings at one location, and I know that gun is associated with a certain group or gang, then I start to look at, well, why is that gang now suddenly in this area? What's the reason for it? Is there somebody who lives there, a relation or somebody that they were visiting, and that's why they're there? Is there somebody there from a rival gang?
So there's real cops trying to solve a real problem. And what do we have from Jelly Durka?
Jelly Durka Durk.
We have gun safes. What do we have from the King County Councilman? Gun safes. And what do we have from Heroin Dan Satterberg? Let's say they make these arrests. These cops go out and they bravely make these arrests against gang members.
Our incarceration rate in the state of Washington is among the 10 lowest in the United States.
And what do we have from Smack Daddy Dow Constantine?
Since 2002, we've reduced the average daily population of young people in the juvenile system at the Youth Services Center from 212 to fewer than 50.
But remember what Sideshow Bob says.
The law matters. It's not an abstract notion, the law. The law has a huge impact on the people of this country. And that's...
Yeah, thanks, Bob. I know you mean that. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. Forced unionization, we know that it's a big deal. I actually didn't know it's this big of a deal. So I'll give you some numbers around forced unionization just on one element, Medicaid and Medicare home workers, the amount of money the government has stolen from these people and given to unions, plus audio from Sideshow Bob, a part-time attorney general, full-time seeker of the gubernatorial campaign donations. I don't think it's ever been on talk radio before. I think you'll be the first to hear it. Yeah! Okay! Young Tom, that's a great one. That's a great one, man.
Yes.
Such a man of so many words can hardly shut up. Remember, if you are of a mind and you've got some extra resources, will you please give some money to the family of Officer Diego Moreno? They've lost, they've lost their father. They've lost their husband. And it's simple. All you need to do is text Diego, D-I-E-G-O, to 800-465-8770. You'll immediately get a link to the GoFundMe for this family. And they're going through incredible pain. Diego's wife has said that she reads every note they get. So when you donate, you'll be able to leave a message that she will see. And she said she's reading every note and that they are bringing her comfort. So again, text the word Diego to 57682. We all know about the obvious taxes of people like... sorry. Sleepy Jay Inslee, like he wanted to impose on carbon.
At some point, America will have to do what is done on many occasions after Republican governors or presidents have come in. We will have to restore the balance of our fiscal condition.
What he means is, what he said is, oh yeah, we're raising taxes. Yeah, don't count on it. Sleepy Jay Inslee. So we know about the obvious tax, but the less obvious tax is the forced unionization. I knew it was huge, but I really didn't know how huge. There's a piece by Hunter Lovell in the Free Beacon. This is on one maneuver that the left pulls with unions, for unions. It is about redirecting money from Medicare caregivers' payments to the unions. Now, if you are a Medicare caregiver, you're probably not earning that much money. There's a very good chance that you are only getting a stipend because you're a mom or a dad. You're staying home to care for a child who is terminally ill or a child who's developmentally disabled to the degree that they can't live independently. And that's your life. You care for them day in, day out, 24 hours a day, no breaks, for very little money. Or you are caring for a dying parent or a parent who is similarly disabled, okay? The cold heart of the union has worked to force these people into unionization. But, of course, the Supreme Court has freed people, right? No, not in Washington State. Because the SEIU, who's one of their chief lobbyists, is Luke Esser. Luke used to be the chairperson of the Republican Party. Luke's a nice man. I don't want to say he's not a nice man, but it says something about Washington state politics that Luke Esser has gone to work for the SEIU. The SEIU wrote a bill for Sleepy Jay that magically turned these people who had been turned into government workers. Okay, government workers. They were not working for the government. They didn't get any benefits, any pensions. They just said, okay, you're a government worker, so we can force you to join the union. Those people have now been turned into suddenly employees of a private company that the state invented. It costs the state more, but they put these people into now private companies because the private company can force them to unionize. Here's the money
aspect to this. I knew about the scam, the money. Skimming these paychecks in 2017, California, Connecticut, Illinois, Minnesota, Oregon, Vermont, and Washington deducted $150 million from their paychecks of these Medicare care workers and gave that by force to the unions, who then launder that money, pay themselves outrageous salaries for doing, having stolen the money, and then they launder it and give it back to the Democrats in campaign donations and volunteer labor to get more Democrats elected. The total amount of money since the turn of the 21st century that states have siphoned in this way, stolen from people at force, is $1.4 billion. Some of the people who are paid the least to care for people who need the most. Isn't that fascinating? And yet it's the Republicans who are thieves. So I thought I would check into the mind of Sideshow Bob, our part-time attorney general, full-time seeker of campaign donations, because he's running for governor. So I wanted to consult him on his legal theory. So I did some research. I found out that he gave a talk at Oxford and engaged in a Q&A. And what he said there stands in stark contrast to what he's actually defending, because he defends unions in doing this. I sure wish I had Young Tom's Sideshow Bob sound, because it's better than this one, but we'll use this. This is the old Sideshow Bob song. Shirt. Too sexy for my shirt, so sexy it hurts. That's Bob.
You might like this version a little better, though. Too sexy for Milan, New
York, and Japan. That's Bob. Just loves himself. Teen idol that he is. So, Bob, about this siphoning $1.4 billion out of the paychecks of people who are home caring for desperately ill and dying loved ones to fund the unions for $1.4 billion since the turn of the 21st century. Bob, how do you view the law?
I mean, I do think of my work in the law as a moral enterprise. I think...
Stop. Who's morality? Because there's that thing about the Constitution. So he thinks of it as a moral enterprise. So I would just ask, whose morality? Yours?
I mean, I do think of my work in the law as a moral enterprise. I think of the law oftentimes through a moral lens, in large part because I say this to my team all the time, right, that the law has such a huge impact on people, right? Every case...
Right. $1.4 billion. That law has allowed you to steal from home health care workers.
You bring has massive implications. Someone's life is going to be impacted.
Right. Someone who's home caring for their loved one who's dying is having their paycheck stolen and given to big labor.
By that lawsuit. And you have to always remember that. Yes, we have to focus on the law and the Constitution.
But, do you hear the implied but? We have to focus on the law and the Constitution. And he implies the word but.
But to tell the stories or to think about the stories of who's going to be impacted by that. And I think that the law can be used as a great equalizer on behalf of folks who may not have access to justice.
Do you mean like someone who is earning $12 an hour to stay home and care for their dying kid?
Access to quality lawyers. There's a fellow here, Rob Costello, who's worked.
Right. So that's his view. Then he likes to pretend it's all about consumer protection, Sideshow Bob.
Consumer protection, it is what it sounds like, right? That if consumers are being taken advantage of in the marketplace, someone's not playing by the rules, we can bring a lawsuit against, we have a big one against Comcast, right?
Okay, so you sued Comcast because you think they lied in some ads, but you support big labor stealing money from the paychecks of people staying home to care for rich kids, or I mean for sick kids and dying family members. Bob. I know you think you're sexy and all, but you're naked. You are a naked power seeker. You are nakedly in pursuit of control. You are nakedly ideological. You're nakedly cold. You cannot have those statements, Bob, and be in favor of what is going on to these home healthcare workers.
We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. A leaked document from the ACLU indicates what the ACLU has become. And Reason.com got a hold of this document, and it makes official what we've sensed about the ACLU. It's been a while since we've talked about rights versus anti-rights. So I want to refresh your memory on the idea of and the theory of anti-rights being practiced by the left. It's been a while since we've talked about this, but it's important to re-remember because it... I think it puts into perspective what we are fighting against. I'll start with this. The ACLU, Reason.com, got a hold of some internal memos from the ACLU that, in fact, it's an ACLU whistleblower, a woman who's worked there for a long time and is leaving the organization and is panicked, frankly, that the ACLU is now purposely saying that they no longer stand for free speech, if that speech can be, quote, harmful to marginalized groups. Within that phrase, there's a whole bunch of wiggle room. What speech is harmful? What is a marginalized group? But furthermore, it runs counter to their position on the First Amendment. Now, I'm not breaking any news telling you that the ACLU is a leftist group, okay? One of their excuses for not backing the Second Amendment is they claim that the government has so scared people about terrorism, etc., that people own guns in response to that. But they don't understand that by owning guns, you're making the government do crazy things. They contend that because Americans own a bunch of guns, it makes the government want to spy on us. Literally, this is the why are you making them hit you defense. Literally. Now, why are you making the government spy on you? Give up your guns. You're making them spy on you. The ACLU, though, is a champion of something new. The left calls these positive rights. Barack Obama was famously critical of the United States Constitution by saying its fatal flaw is that it's a series of negative rights, what the government cannot do to you, and does not contain any positive rights, what the government must do for you. He calls them positive rights. May I suggest instead that what the ACLU and other leftists are backing is a series of anti-rights. Okay, matter and antimatter. If you consult the original Bill of Rights, you'll notice a consistency. Every one of these original rights is a constraint upon two things. Number one, government power. Number two, your neighbor being able to use government power to coerce you. For instance, we have a right to address the government as regards our grievances, right? Clearly. Now, if you were to address the government about your grievance and your grievance is that your neighbor has more than you do, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights gives the government absolutely no right to say, yes, I see, your neighbor does have more than you. How about if we take some of what they have and give it to you? Doesn't contain that at all. So it blocks people with access to government being able to use that access to coerce from you, right? An anti-right is a right literally taken upside down. An anti-right is someone saying, I have the right to force you to do X. I have the right to demand a so-called job. I have the right to demand a house. I have the right to a college education. What that actually means is I have a right to your life's energy. I have a right to some of your sweat. How much? Well, it depends on what I want. And it further depends
on what I can get government to give me through you. So the left is constructing a series of anti-rights, but there's something else about these anti-rights. They always supersede the basic rights. Here's why. Basic rights, like your right to worship God as you see fit and to live your life in a religious capacity, is a passive right. You have it, you can use it, but you cannot use it to do unto others, okay? You don't have the ability to force others into living your way. The new anti-rights always supersede in society the actual rights. So case in point, there is a, and I'll talk about this in detail tomorrow, there's a state that has banned Catholic groups from engaging in child adoptions. It turns out that the Catholic Church is one of the largest adoption agencies in the world. But because the Catholic Church teaches the biblical view of marriage, they're no longer allowed to do that in this state. That's an anti-right, which is a right confiscatory. Some people now have rights to adopt kids, others do not. It supersedes it, or one that is more in the public consciousness. The newly invented rights of the gender dysphoric. And I got a note from one of our transgender listeners or gender dysphoria having listeners, Jillian, reminding me that they are not all leftists. I know, Jillian, I love you. The right of a man with gender dysphoria to get naked in front of you supersedes your right to associate with whom you choose. The right of someone to demand that you bake the cake bigot supersedes your right to live your life religiously.
Down on Main Street. Down on Main Street.
Hey, thanks for listening all day to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. And to everybody on the podcast, hello, later listeners. It's always interesting because you guys send me notes while you're listening to the podcast on Twitter, at Toddy Herman. It's always cool to know that somewhere out there, someone might be listening to the show. In fact, I can tell you, you know what happened to my daughter several months ago? She was taking a walk through the neighborhood, and a car went by playing my show. And she, that's a weird thing. For a daughter to see a car going by and that someone in it is listening to her dad on the radio. Well, my daughter has told me I'm famous, and I disagree. I'm not famous, not even close to famous, have no interest in being famous, but still it can be a little cringy for a kid, although she is proud of the show. And a personal note tonight, I was having coffee with my wife the other morning in the front room, enjoying the sunny day. And the view that we're blessed to have at our house. And my wife said, you remember that little gym we used to go to in Kent? And I remember we used to take my daughter to this little gym in Kent. And from time to time, I would go with them and we'd all hang out and she would go do her kid gym thing. She said, do you remember a guy who worked there? Was really, really gentle with the kids, younger guy. Do you remember him? I believe he was from Venezuela. And I said, I remember a guy who was, you know, really gentle with the kids. And I didn't have as good a memory for that. My wife said, it was Officer Moreno. It was Officer Diego Moreno who worked with our daughter. This is the officer who lost his life this week. This shouldn't happen. I mean, I'm sad enough that an officer has lost his life in this utterly senseless buffoonery with these kids out apparently shooting at other kids, probably gang related, probably some of heroin Dan Satterberg's diversion candidates or participants, because, you know, we don't prosecute youth crime here anymore. I was already broken up about it because I learned a little bit about this officer and what he meant to school children, but his hands had touched my daughter. His hands had helped her do things like handstands and learn how to jump on a trampoline with good form and Officer Moreno is, I'm sure, had high-fived her when she was a little kid. And it just affected me worse to know that we experienced this kindness. And so did my daughter. So I haven't had a chance to tell her yet. I want her to look at his picture and see if she remembers this kind man. There's something magical about a man like Officer Moreno, who at once can be so patient and so playful and so loving with children, who can also then turn around and be, out of necessity, a bit of a warrior. Because when you become a street cop, there's a chance that you are going to have to be warrior-like to defend your life or defend the lives of others. There's something, to me, almost sacred about that role that we have as men. And nothing, I think, to me, expresses the full depth of fatherhood than when you can go from being, you know, someone holding your daughter or your son and embracing them and tickling them and laughing with them and reading these books with them, to having to be an utterly savage defender of your kids. You know, I have very rarely had any kind of feeling of danger around my daughter. But I remember we were at a park once, and there were some teenage boys too old to be hanging out in a park, frankly, probably 18 or 19 years old, skateboarding, cursing, smoking. And look, I was no angel when I was a kid. I don't think everybody should be an angel. But one of them came far too close to knocking over some of the kids, one of whom was my daughter. And I said, hey, guys, just take it easy, man. There's little kids here. So I tried to play it that way. And they backed off for a bit, but then they got right back to it. And one of their skateboards, this was not a skateboard park, by the way, one of their skateboards went up and it knocked my daughter down, and two of the boys laughed. They thought it was funny. I'm not particularly proud of this, but I jumped off of the swing I was on. Yeah, I was on a swing. I jumped off of the swing, and before I really knew what I was doing, I went over and I took the skateboard and I bashed it against a pole and I broke it. And I said, I told you guys. And I picked up my daughter, and she was only a little kid. She was, you know, she was crying because she was scared. She wasn't really hurt. She was scared. But the boys, they were really upset. And I realized, okay, here I am. There's three of them. I'm holding my daughter. Not a good move. And I said, hey, I'm going to pay for a new skateboard for you. Okay, I'll give you some money for a new skateboard. But man, I told you, you can't do this with kids around. So I set her down and I was looking at the kids. I realized, okay, it's good. These kids are not gangsters. They're just kids. So I did. I got a couple $100 out, and I also gave him my email address and said, hey, if this is not enough, you let me know. I'm sorry I broke your skateboard, but honestly, guys, you can't do this around little kids. And one of the boys came over and he shook my hand and said, dude, you remind me of my dad. He goes, yeah, it was dumb. And he went over and he said, can I talk to your little kid? And he went over and he kind of got down on, got down on her level. He said, hey, I'm sorry our skateboard hit you. And he smelled of cigarettes. And to be honest, he may have smelled of a little beer. He said, hey, I'm sorry we scared you. Your dad's a big guy. He came and he broke that skateboard. Did you see him break that skateboard? And he was trying to make a joke of it. Hey, I didn't know you could even break a skateboard. And he did a good job. And I was really grateful for that. And then, of course, it's back to the dad role. Pick up my daughter, go get a snow cone, talk. You broke that boy's skateboard. Yes, I did. That's wrong. You shouldn't break things. You're right. I overreacted. Why did you overreact, Dad? Dad, how come you overreacted? And set her down with our snow cones on the picnic table at this beach park. And I said, because I was afraid he had hurt you. And they overreacted because I will do whatever is necessary to protect you. And I was afraid that he hurt you, and I allowed myself to become angry that he'd hurt you. And she said, yeah, but you gave him money. I said, yes, I did. Well, and you're going to fix his toy. Well, I can't fix it, but yeah, he's going to get another one. Maybe you should break one of my toys and I can get a new toy. There's something magical about that dichotomy of fatherhood, right? Isn't that kind of how we're designed? To Officer Diego Moreno's family, thank you for the fact that your dearly beloved and far too suddenly departed husband, neighbor, brother, thank you that his gentle hands high-fived my little girl at that little gym. And may God give you peace. This is the Todd Herman Show. We air every weekday, 3 to 6 p.m. I'll see you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Be well, be strong, and be kind.